You're listening to the Charlottesville Podcasting Network with your host, Dan Gould. New malls are springing up both in the city of Charlottesville and Albemarle County. Listen as Chris Engel and Mark Graham speak to the effect of these new developments on city and county planning. Mr. Engel and Graham spoke at the Wednesday, October 10, 2012 meeting of the Senior Statesmen of Virginia. The meeting was held in the Senior Center in Charlottesville. Following the presentation, questions were taken from the audience. Please bear with us during the first 6 minutes of this podcast as we work out a problem with the audio quality. The program was moderated by SSV Secretary Bill Davis.
Thank you, Bob. I tell you, it's a privilege to have this program here today. We've got two absolutely outstanding people, one from the city and one from the county, both are who are on the front lines every day in economic development. Chris Engel is Director of Economic Development for the City of Charlottesville. He has a degree from Mary Washington College and a master's from Virginia Commonwealth University. He's also a graduate of the Economic Development Institute at the University of Oklahoma. Mark Graham is the Director of Community Development for Albemarle County. He has a BS in Civil Engineering from the University of Texas at Austin, and an MBA from Virginia Tech, and he's been a registered professional engineer in Virginia since 1982. So we are very fortunate to have two highly qualified speakers today. What we will do is I'll let them go with their presentation. At the end of that, we will open it up for questions. So I ask you to hold your questions until the question period, and we will get around to everyone. I also remind you, and I'll do it again later, but we podcast these, so we need, if you have a question, we will bring a microphone to you and use the microphone so we get it into our podcast. So I'll turn it over to Chris and Mark and let you all go from here.
Okay, thank you, Bill. Looks like I'm going to go first here, and I understand we're supposed to be fascinating, interesting, enlightening. It's quite a quite a bill. I wasn't told that until just now. So, I'll do my best. I'm in the interesting position of I work for the City of Charlottesville. I'm the Director of Economic Development. Both of the projects that are highlighted in your program here today are actually not in the City of Charlottesville. They're in the County of Albemarle. Mark will talk more specifically about what is happening in the process related to each of those. But we are, in fact, a single community, the city and the county and even beyond. So I'm going to kind of walk you through, I hope this is interesting to you, a little bit of the retail history, how retail has developed in Charlottesville leading up to where we are today. And hopefully that'll set the stage a bit for Mark, who will talk, as I mentioned, a little more specifically about each of the two projects, which is probably why you're all here. Wanting to know when your favorite new store might or might not open. But and I'll also state that I'm not an expert in retail. I don't know that Mark would claim he is either, but we'll do our best to address that in developments in general. So the one thing I will say at the outset about retail and shopping in general is, and there's a little phrase that we use in economic development, that retail follows rooftops. And if you think about that, it makes sense. If you're in the business of opening a grocery store, you want to know that there's enough folks in the nearby vicinity to support that store. So you go and count the rooftops. And under each of those rooftops, there's two, three, four members of a household, and you make your decision based upon that. So the notion that retail comes and then it becomes successful because of the surrounding area is really not accurate. It's typically decisions are made based upon the population and some other expectations that folks who make these type of decisions will factor in. But in general, retail development will follow rooftops and will follow people as opposed to the other way around. So I'm going to get started here, and I've got some interesting kind of tidbits here. Some of you may recognize this. This is Main Street, the former Main Street before it was the downtown mall in Charlottesville. Every city in the country has a Main Street probably. At one point, most of them looked a little bit like this. I believe this photo was probably in the 50s. It's looking west on West Main Street. So downtowns all had had a Main Street, and that's where the commerce took place. That's where most of the businesses were with respect to retail. That's often where a lot of the professional services were. And in many downtowns, that continues to be the case, although in many cases, it's also changed quite a bit. We've gone through a bit of an evolution in terms of cities and what they look like and where various services are. So as you can see in this picture, a variety of stores, and it was a job center. And downtown continues to be a job center, but a little bit different flavor as we move into the time period we are in right now. So I'm going to sprinkle this with we're going to look at Charlottesville, but I also have some kind of national landmarks or dates, if you will, as to when things got started in this country with respect to some of the changes we're going to talk about. So the first shopping district that was not in a downtown was created in 1922 by a man named J.C. Nichols in Kansas City. It was called Country Club Plaza. And it was unique in that it had unified architecture, it had paved and lighted parking lots, and it was managed as a single unit. So in the history of the United States, that is considered to be the first what we would call shopping center, totally oriented towards shopping, and it was not on a Main Street, as you would see here. So that was in 1922. In 1931, a fellow named Hugh Prather in Dallas, Texas, created another kind of shopping center that was all under a single ownership, and it was removed from a downtown. The first reference that I made was actually very close to a downtown, and it was kind of integrated. This shopping center called Highland Park Shopping Center in Dallas, Texas, was actually removed, and its stores faced inward as opposed to outward, away from the streets. And at the time, it was considered a revolutionary design. And that was in 1932. So if you look at Charlottesville in 1922 or 1932, you didn't see anything near like this. These were kind of cutting edge back in those days. As you move on into the 30s and 40s, Sears, Roebuck, Montgomery Company are names that you might recognize or remember. They set up large freestanding stores on their own sites with parking, and they too were away from city centers and away from downtowns. So this was the progression from the 20s and 30s up into the 50s. And in the 50s, you saw shopping centers that were anchored by department stores, and they were also located outside of downtowns. And you'll recognize Charlottesville's first entry into this market was Barracks Road Shopping Center, which opened in 1957. That's an early picture of Barracks Road. It looks much different now. There's some different buildings in the parking area, and it's continued both to the north and to the south. It has almost 500,000 square feet, almost exclusively retail, 113 stores, and a number of restaurants. So that was 1956, and as I mentioned before, either depending on which date you look at, 1922 or 1931, Charlottesville was, you know, a good 20, 25 years behind the curve, if you will, with respect to when it received its first shopping center. And I think you'll notice the trend as it continued to move on. Talking about some of the other developments. In 1956, the first enclosed mall was built in Edina, Minnesota. And it had central air conditioning, heating, common areas, and two competitive department stores as anchors. So if you think about Charlottesville in 1956, you simply had a shopping center much like Barracks Road. But the enclosed mall that we now all recognize embodied in Fashion Square here locally had not come to Charlottesville. And also in that time period, that previous picture that I showed you of West Main Street was changed dramatically to create the downtown pedestrian mall, and that happened in 1976. This is a very early picture of that, I think about 2 years after the construction was done. And Charlottesville is not unique. Many cities across the country tried to respond to the move of department stores out of center cities and to these freestanding locations by creating downtown environments where they had pedestrian activity. Charlottesville is unique in that we've been successful in actually keeping that going for now 36 years. Many downtowns around the country have pulled the bricks up and gone back to a vehicular pattern along their main streets. There are a few notable examples throughout the country where that's not the case, and Charlottesville is often looked at as one of those that has been successful in that regard. The story, as I'm told, back during this period in the early 70s was two or three of the major stores that were located on the mall or on Main Street had considered relocating or did relocate and moved out of downtown. And the mall was a response by the city council and city fathers at that time to create an environment that would hopefully keep them. And if not keep them, then create something a little bit different that would be attractive to folks so that the downtown didn't decay. And I think over time it's proven to be successful. There's a little over 1.5 million square feet, 192 stores, and at last count, somewhere in the neighborhood of 55 restaurants within a very short walk of where that picture is taken, which is really phenomenal if you think about 55 restaurants surviving in such a small area. And as I alluded to earlier, downtowns have changed their makeup. They're no longer where the major department stores are. In our particular downtown has evolved a bit to be an entertainment hub and a dining hub, whereas 50 years ago it was where you went to buy underwear and socks and groceries. You're hard-pressed to find a pair of socks that are affordable in downtown Charlottesville. But you can dine on pretty much any type of cuisine that you want in a short walk, and you can find a place to park your car, you can do banking, you can shop at some specialty shops. So the nature of downtown has changed quite a bit over the years. And let's see, so in 1964, I mentioned in 1956 was the first enclosed mall. And in 1964, there were 7,600 shopping centers, much like the Barracks Road style in the country. And suburban development following World War II really created that need and that demand for additional retail. So shopping centers basically exploded between 1964 and 1972. They doubled to a little over 14,000 shopping centers, and regional malls actually came on the scene as an actual entity that competed with downtowns and the regular shopping centers. And you see that here. This is Fashion Square, which opened in 1980, a little over 500,000 square feet, 80 stores and a number of restaurants. It's gone through a couple iterations during its lifetime and a couple of facade changes, but by and large it stayed very similar. So you see that Charlottesville received its first indoor enclosed mall in 1980, and if you'll remember back to 1956 in Edina, Minnesota, that was the first enclosed mall in the country. So once again, Charlottesville 20 so years behind the curve, if you will, with respect to retail. And then moving forward a little bit, Hollymead Town Center, which opened in 2003, which has some anchor stores that you might recognize. So this center, which you might consider a power center, which has a couple of major anchors, the Target obviously is one of them. These came into vogue in the 1980s, and these were built throughout the country at that time, and they were often built even farther out than the from the city center than the enclosed mall or the strip shopping centers that we referenced along the way. So you're seeing an evolution here. Those became popular in the 1980s. There are more than 16,000 centers built between 1980 and 1990. Most of those are what we call power centers or regional centers, very similar to what you see here at the Hollymead Town Center. And that brings us to a little bit about what we're talking about today. This is a graphic of the shops at Stonefield, which is very close by here on the other side of 29. And the projected opening, Mark will talk more specifically about this, but is actually this year for a portion of the center. It's fairly large, a little over 1.2 million square feet. So, but the interesting thing that you might notice about this is it's actually closer, well, although not in the city, it's a stone's throw from the actual city. So the trend in a geographic nature is to move back towards the population center, towards the downtown of the center of the population. As you notice, we progress from Barracks Road to Fashion Square to Hollymead Town Center, and that's a series of miles from the center of downtown. This is actually much closer. The other project we're going to talk about, which is the Fifth Street Station on the south side of Charlottesville, is also just across the city line and very close to the actual population center. So I think what you're seeing is a trend in retail to kind of refocus and actually create an experience for people as opposed to simply an opportunity to park the car and shop. They're trying to create, you may have heard the term lifestyle center, which combines restaurants with entertainment, with retail, perhaps with a hotel. And you may even consider the shops at Stonefield to fit into that category. It also will have some residential in it as well. And you see these throughout the country being built much in the same fashion with kind of a Main Street, if you will. If you think back to the original photo that I showed you of West Main Street with the cars on it, and if you look, I don't know if this thing works or not. It doesn't look like it. But anyway, if you look just to the left of the image there, marks, yeah, right about where the cursor is, they're in effect creating a Main Street, which you will be able to, and Mark can verify this, perhaps even park, parallel park on either side as you drive down, very similar to the original West Main Street, Main Street in Charlottesville. Certainly there's plenty of parking out back and in other places, but the trend is back towards creating an environment that is very reminiscent of the 1950s or 1940s of many downtowns. And we like to think that's because they're emulating success, and we've been successful in Charlottesville, so we think maybe that's what they're after there. But anyway, that's the shops at Stonefield, and like I said, Mark will talk a bit more about the specifics related to that. Let's see here. The next one is the Fifth Street Station, which is just south of Charlottesville on Fifth Street in between Avon and Fifth Street Extended. And this one's a bit farther off in terms of when it may even break ground. It hasn't broken ground yet. This is Fifth Street right over here. And there's a road that's intended to go through here that is a connection between Avon and Fifth Street. And this is the main center. So once again, these folks are—they don't have a movie theater, quite as much entertainment. But the idea of trying to create a destination where you can do multiple things in a single visit, and trying to create an experience that's interesting to folks outside of just the retail component is what they're after here. Almost 500,000 square feet, so a considerable addition to the market. Once again, one of the questions that Mr. Smith posed to me when we were talking about what to speak about was what's the impact on folks in the area from these new centers. And my initial response is, well, you're going to have additional opportunity to shop at places you may not have been able to shop at before. And in a lot of cases, both of these developments are going to bring new players to the market. Trader Joe's never had a location within the city of Charlottesville or even the county. The closest one's probably Northern Virginia or perhaps even Richmond, but that's new. We've heard quite a bit of talk about Wegmans as being one of the locations that will visit Fifth Street Station, and Wegmans is not in the market. if you look at some of the other retailers that have been talked about for both of these places, and I don't have specifics on them, most of them are from out of the market. So what that meant previously was that people never deny themselves the things they want, so they find a way to get them, and whether that's shopping online or whether that's getting in the car and going to Potomac Mills or Richmond, that's often what people have done. From the economic perspective, that's what we call leakage. That's dispendable income going outside the market and purchasing something and bringing it back. When you consider how an economy works best, to the extent that you can keep revenue circulating locally within your economy, that typically indicates a more healthy economy. So these two centers will bring new players to the market that will enable Charlottesville and Albemarle citizens to shop locally, support jobs locally, and enhance the economy through that mechanism. In addition, to the extent that we become closer for people, say, in the Shenandoah Valley, who would typically drive even farther to visit one of their favorite retailers, Charlottesville may become a destination for them as they seek to get their retail fix, if you will. So, you know, we may see additional folks visiting to simply for shopping opportunities that are now made available. So certainly there's going to be enhanced opportunity for citizens to engage in retail in these different, slightly different environments, but also taking advantage of offerings that were not previously in the market at all. One of the other things Charlie asked me to talk about was taxes. And this graph shows lodging taxes, meals taxes, and sales taxes for the city of Charlottesville for the past 5 years, starting in 2008. It's the first 7 months of each year for an accurate comparison through 2012. And if you'll remember back to 2008, we experienced a pretty significant financial correction starting in late 2008. So the number that you see up here starts to go down significantly in 2009. We were lucky to see it somewhat level off in 2010, start to peak just a tiny bit back up in 11. And in the first 7 months of 2012, we're seeing a significant increase back up to similar levels that were experienced pre-recession. So that's a positive sign from our perspective. And once again, these are just city figures. I do have a chart here in a minute that will show sales tax in the county. We also have meals tax and lodging tax, which are less relevant to this conversation. But as you can see, a similar pattern here with lodging and meals taxes and lodging taxes starting to come back up from that low period, which is a healthy signal for the economy with respect to the revenues that the city or county have at their disposal. Each of these three together certainly comprise a significant part of the general fund. And when you're looking at various ways to fund the activity of government, regardless of where you stand on what government should be doing, there's only so many ways you can fund things. And when sales tax, meals tax, lodging taxes take a hit, then that means some cuts are imminent or some other strategies have to be taken. So we look at these numbers quite regularly to see where they are with respect to how the economy is performing and also with respect to how we'll have to budget for the following year. This shows sales tax in the county. It doesn't have the other two items on here, so the scale is slightly different. You can see 2008, a significant drop to 2009 from that high, but you can also see a very similar trend each year cropping back up a bit, and 2012 about level, just down a tick. So the interesting thing will be is 2 or 3 years from now to look at these figures and see how both the city and county are faring with respect to how these numbers stack up once these two or one center, one and a half centers are open. We'll see with respect to the opening date of Fifth Street. But our hope is that the community spends more time shopping locally and less time traveling to Richmond or other places to buy things, and that we in fact see a growth in sales tax revenue in both the city and the county. That would be ideal. Across the road from the shops at Stonefield is Seminole Square. Just down the road is Barracks Road, both healthy and vibrant centers. There's quite a bit of activity at Seminole Square currently with the Outback Steakhouse is being retrofitted. That'll be opening soon. There's a new Mexican restaurant coming in just behind that. So we see great opportunity for the shops at Stonefield and Barracks Road not to necessarily compete with what's happening at Stonefield, because they're different. They have different markets. They have different niches. You know, I think we can all agree that Charlottesville needs a new movie theater. If you've sat in the seats at any of the theaters for any length of time, you would probably agree. And back to my narrative of Charlottesville is typically behind the cutting edge trends, if you will. You know, stadium seating is not all that new a trend. And you have to go to Waynesboro to get a stadium seat and a cup holder and watch a movie. I think in late November that will no longer be the case, and there's going to be Regal Cinema is relocating and enhancing their theater watching opportunity for folks that live here. So that's certainly a benefit that I think we'll all benefit from to the extent that we go and enjoy movies. Let's see. Yeah, that's the end of my presentation. At this point, I think we'll have a chance for questions at the end. And with that, I'll turn it over to Mark and let him speak to us. Okay. Thank you, Mark.
Thanks. Let's give the gentleman just a second to see if he can switch over and get to my presentation here.
Bring your mic a little closer to your mouth.
There we go. Is that better? All right. If anyone does have a problem, because I do tend to turn away and then my voice kind of falls off, just let me know, wave your hand or something, and I promise I'll try to do better. First off,
that's the wrong one.
We're back to the original presentation. I don't know what happened here.
You want to hear from me again?
I could try repeating, but I think Chris did a much better job than I ever would.
If you come to showing location, point out streets and the corner.
I will try to do so. I tried to label them on some of these, but I'll try to make sure I do so. I will make sure to point out Trader Joe's to everybody. Yeah, you can't miss it. All right, thank you very much. We're in great shape now. So this is how it all starts: bunch of people standing out in the yard, real happy, and pushing dirt around. And then the construction really starts, and everybody gets mad at everybody. But anyhow, I wanted to start before we went too far with this. This is a map of the county, and what I really wanted to emphasize was Albemarle County, as far as how its land is used, really tries to focus the development. And, you know, there's this area with the city and immediately surrounding the city, just a little bit out here at Crozet, and then just a tiny, tiny amount out at what we call the Village of Ravana or Glenmore. The point being, the county is really trying to put its commercial development on less than 5% of the land in the county. It wants the other 95% to stay rural. We recognize that a lot of people in this area moved here because of that rural area. That's what they value. We're trying to protect that. And we understand that that's an important part of this county's heritage. With that said, let me just kind of jump in. I'm going to talk about the two projects everybody asked me to, but also what other things that we have going on, because we do have a number of projects going on. Albemarle, up in Albemarle, Hollymead Town Center, Stonefield, Albemarle Square. There's changes going on there. And Shoppers World, you've probably seen all these things torn up. So let me just kind of jump in and start going down. First, Stonefield, because I know that's what everybody's interested in. And for the roads, that's Hydraulic Road over there. There's Route 29. And down here on the other side is the Seminole Square Shopping Center with Giant and everything like that. And most importantly to everybody, that right there on the corner, that's Trader Joe's. So we're all straight on that. And if you haven't figured out which one's the theater, you need to get your eyes checked. Some people call it a white elephant, but it is a big building. There's no question about it. But there are a number of other buildings that are going to be opening up fairly soon here. Pier 1 is right here. It's going to open up in November along with Trader Joe's. The Regal Theater will open up. Shortly after, there's another Burton's Grill that's going to open up. So we have a number of things that are going to be happening. One of the things I wanted to talk to you about for a second with it is, and Chris got into this a little, this is more of a lifestyle center than the traditional power center. And he mentioned that this is called what will be called Bond Street. This is the new street you see when you, if you're driving down 29, you look up, you see the street, and there will be parking along the sides of it. And then you have to kind of go down the street and pull around and get into the parking lots. But one of the things I did want to point out to you is right now what they're looking at is about 250,000 square feet here. And then up here, a Hyatt hotel with a big parking lot there. But the whole thing is actually planned as far as how it will evolve with time. Chris mentioned the downtown mall and how it has parking structures. Well, right now, what the Shops of Stonefield has is surface parking lots here. But these are actually planned for the future that some of these surface parking lots can be come back and be converted into parking structures, and then they can add additional development here and up in here in some of the other locations. And the same will happen over here on the north side when it develops, which, frankly, is about 3 or 4 years out is my guess. But it's kind of interesting to see developers are no longer just thinking about build the buildings and go. They're trying to think about what is the long term for our project. And so they're already trying to build some evolution into this project here. It'll be interesting to see what's going on there. As I said, the Hyatt's going in here. That's the hotel. It'll be about a six-story hotel going right there. And you've probably seen the apartment buildings going up next to it. They actually have a different name, but they're going to be going up pretty quick, and we'll have about 250 apartments there. There are going to be some what they call urban townhouses. These tend to be a tighter form of townhouse, but nice upscale urban development that'll be developed probably in a year or two. And then finally, the last section that will develop is what they call North Side. And there's really not a schedule for getting going with that right now. But I think once this starts proving itself, they'll probably start to look at moving on that one. And then right in the middle, just to orient everybody, that's the Sperry or Northrop Grumman property there. So that's what we've got going right there right now. Right now, this next month, you're going to see Trader Joe's, Pier 1, the Regal Theater all opening up. They're going to be closely followed by a number of other stores. The Blue Ridge Mountain Sports is moving from Barracks Roads up here. Langford Market, which is a restaurant, Travinia Italian Grill, Crate and Barrel, Pottery Barn, the Burton's Grill. This kind of goes to what Chris was saying, the entertainment aspect, the lifestyle. It's less about just another department store, another hardware store, or anything like that. It's about an experience. And this is kind of some of the things you're going to see in the future with the evolution of commercial development, especially with retail. There's going to be much more emphasis on this. The internet's just forcing everybody to change that. Next, I'm going to try to go through this. I've got you a map, and I color-coded it, so I don't know how well you'll be able to see, but I'll try to use the pointer. First is area, what we call Area A1 down here in Hollymead Town Center. This is where the Kohl's is right now, and there's also some other development being built, little strip centers being built in there right now. That one's still under development, about 150,000 square feet to go. This this area right in here, Area B, is that's what everybody thinks of as Hollymead Town Center. That's the Harris Teeters right here, the Targets right there, and all the other stores are in between. But that's the what everybody's thinking of is most of the Hollymead Town Center. But if you go up Timberwood Drive over here on the north side, that's Area C, and that's Rosewood Village is already developed up there, but there's a lot of it undeveloped. There's about 250,000 square feet to go up there. And then finally, Area D up here, excuse me, I skipped over Area A too, I'll come back to it, but Area D is townhouses. This is what they call Abington, which is now built out with about 300 units, was done by Ryan Holmes. Area B2 is not developed, and the developer's actually scratching his head, going back to the drawing board, trying to figure out how he wants to develop that now. Flipping over, this kind of gives you a little better perspective. There's the Kohl's, there's the Harris Teeter, and the Target. So this area all up in here is what we call A2, and none of that's been developed, and the developer really is trying to figure out how he wants to develop it. One time, he thought he was going to get a movie theater and try to come in here, but doesn't know. Right now, there's a room for about 350,000 square feet of a commercial, and he's actually has it approved right now for over 2,000 residential units on that piece of property. So how he wants to proceed with that's going to be an interesting experience for all of us. And then just to orient everybody again with the roads, that's 29 right there. And back over here is Timberwood Drive. Another interesting one for people is the Albemarle Square Shopping Center. This is the old Circuit City, and most people may not be aware of it, but that's actually getting ready to evolve into another grocery store called the Fresh Market that's going up there. A fairly upscale grocery store. We're real excited to see it coming in. I've been to a couple of them up in the Northern Virginia area, and very reminiscent of a Wegmans type of store. So that's going to be an interesting thing for us to see. Another development that's going in is down the Shopper's World, where Whole Foods used to be. You probably, if you've driven past, you've seen it's all torn up, got fences put up everywhere. And they're developing that area along the back into a Stein Mart now and preparing it for some other retailers. So that's all under redevelopment right now. So that's what we go in right now. And then what's in the future for us right now? Well, there are a number of things. First off, the Fifth Street project with Wegmans. We're thinking thinking is that's going to be coming online in 2014, start in 2014, and finish up in 2015. I'll go through a couple of these other. Crozet's actually got a number of things going. There's another big development on the north end of the county called North Point, which is still not started. It's just a piece of ground out there. And then out at Glenmore, there's a Village of Ravana Center, which is not started. And then for those of you wondered about the big pads of ground on the across the street from Lowe's on 29, that's called Northtown Center, and that's sitting there ready to go. The developer wanted to create pad-ready sites there. So starting with the Fifth Street, as we've said, we've got Wegmans here. There's still there are some question marks, and you probably heard as many rumors as I have about whether it's going to be a Costco or a Home Depot or something else. It is sized for about 140,000, 150,000 square feet under a roof there. To our knowledge, nobody has signed the deal. It's still being discussed. And similarly, down at the other end, we have a room for another fairly large store, which has not been filled. These are typically what you would call your anchors, then all the other things fill in once they see that the big guys are there and feel like there's enough of a magnet, an attraction, to get people to come there. So I've labeled the streets here to help orient everybody. This is Fifth Street here, and then cut off. But down here is I-64. That's one lane of I-64. And then right over here is Avon, which is makes this road, which we call the Bent Creek Drive, very important to the county. The reason it's so important to us is down here on this side off of South Fifth, we have Redfields, a huge residential development. Our emergency vehicles, our emergency services are actually being provided out of the Mill Creek Fire Station, which is down here off of Avon Street. So this provides, rather than them having to come out and go back up to Route 20 and double back and go up the interstate and then come down, provides them a much more direct way to access that. So it should shorten the, provide, improve the emergency services for them. The other big thing the county's excited about with this is, as anybody who's lived on the south side of the county knows, there's really not much commercial development down there right now, forcing a lot of people who want, need certain shopping experiences, need certain things, to drive either across the county, across the city to the north side, or to go to another location, either to Waynesboro or out to Zion's Crossroad. We think that, talking about the capture again, this will help us capture a lot of the people and who might be considering driving out of the county to get what they need, and also at the same time helping the city with the cross-city traffic. Fewer people will feel a need to drive through the city to get to where they want to up on North 29. Crozet has two big things really going. One is, and it's very active right now, is Old Trail, which you probably have seen, or if you've been out that way, it's under development. I did want to show you, this is the first part of what they call their center, their urban center, which in this picture would be right in here. And just wanted to point out that it's set up for a considerable amount of commercial development out there yet, that's a couple hundred thousand square feet that have not happened yet. Chris talked about retail follows rooftops, and that's exactly what's happening here. The residential development starting to happen out there in Old Trail and also up there on Jarman's Gap Road, but there's just not the number of rooftops. The other thing the county's kind of excited about is downtown. We've actually created a special zoning district that allows a lot of flexibility for the developers and how they develop, and looking for that to go on. And right now in this location here, it's under construction. We have a library. That's the picture of what the library is supposed to look like when it's all done. And we're trying to use that as kind of a growth stimulator for the downtown area. A particular interest to the county right now is this piece of property over here, which is the what was known as the Barnes Lumber Company. That went under, and it went into foreclosure. The bank's trying to figure out what they're going to do with it right now, and we're very interested to see how that's going to redevelop and how it can fit into this picture of downtown. We do see Crozet really as focused on itself more than focused on the larger area, but it's evolving very quickly into a self-supporting little community. The other one I wanted to mention was North Point. And just to orient everybody, this is Route 29 here, and down here, that's Profit Road. So this going this way, going down, would be going to the airport. North would be to your left. So it's got a little over 550,000 square feet of commercial use here, and then about 830 potential residential units as part of that development. That's still just sitting on the drawing boards as far as the developer is concerned. That there's been no activity. There was some interest in doing these townhouses up here, some plans submitted, but after a while they decided that it really wasn't quite the right time to develop, and that's kind of sitting still. The county's real interested in this one as well, because one of the things they is part of this zoning they promised to give the county was a school site, which is right here. So there's from Profit Road, there'd be a main street that goes through this development and comes up. And then this road here, the Northwest Passage is what they call it. And it connects to Lewis and Clark Drive. This over here on the other side of 29 is the North Fork Research Park that UVA has. So that kind of gives you some perspective. And then it would have two additional entrances onto Route 29 there. But as I said, this one's kind of sitting out there for wishful thinking right now. If anyone's interested in developing, I'm sure the developer's real interested in talking to you about it. Finally, this one's kind of on the small side, but I did want to point out, this is out at Glenmore. This is Route 250 on the east side. That's I-64. 64 and 250 run very close to each other right there. this is the main entrance into Glenmore, and that's where you come down, and then you turn, and then you have the gate to go into Glenmore. So right up there by the entrance, and there's about 150,000 square feet of commercial and about 300 residential units that could potentially go in here. And once again, this is one that the recession kind of caught everybody by surprise. They're sitting on the sidelines right now trying to figure out how to develop. But it's sitting there ready to go when everybody wants to. So that's a quick synopsis of what's going on in the county. And I'd like to just kind of follow up with some conclusions or statements about what we see here. First off, I think it's important to note, when we look at what the county is zoned right now, we think there's enough property zoned for commercial development for the anticipated growth for the next 20 plus years. So there's plenty of space out there. Additionally, we think many of the existing developments could and are redeveloping. A great example is Fashion Square Mall. There, you've seen some things go into the out parcels out there, the Red Lobster, for example, and then there was a little shopping center along the north side. There's lots more room up there for redevelopment with Fashion Square. And this goes into that, back to that evolution of the market. As they see the idea of enclosed shopping malls start to go out of fashion, no pun intended, they may be looking at some sort of redevelopment opportunities there. Similarly, across the road, Albemarle Square, as I mentioned, there's already a fresh market coming in there, but there's a lot of opportunity for redevelopment in that shopping center as well. Been sitting there for a long time. Putting the first two bullets there together, what that really means to us is that commercial development in the county is not supply limited, it's demand limited. And that goes to the next point here. Retail growth is a function of rooftops. We've said it over and over and over again. What really has to happen for us to have that growth in retail is to have additional residential growth. You have additional residential growth by having jobs. So that's kind of the limiting factor there right now. It has nothing to do with what the county's doing. We're focusing more of our interest in trying to create industry that provides good-paying jobs for people. And then finally, what I wanted to just kind of put out there, because a lot of really smart people are scratching their head about this, is consider the future of commercial development. A lot is changing, and it's changing very, very fast for these people. I'll give you a great example. Last Christmas, I was out doing Christmas shopping. I was at the mall at one of the department stores there, and there was two young ladies, and they had their iPhone with them, and they were looking at coats and everything, and they were grabbing the barcode and scanning it with their iPhone. And what they were doing, I didn't realize you could do this until my kids told me you could do this. But you could scan the barcode on that coat, and they could instantly go out on the internet and compare prices across the whole internet. Who had that same coat for a better price for them? Well, now you've converted that store from a store into a showroom. You know, to me, this was a little like singing 100 bottles of beer on the wall at church or something. It was just, it seemed a little wrong to be going into a store and using them that way. But I think it was a great example. Smartphones are really changing things. Wireless internet is really changing things. We're starting to see that even with our work. People used to not really be able to work. The main reason people used to not be able to work at home was information. You needed files. You needed access to information that was at that office location. That's no longer a constraint. It's all digitized now. It's all available everywhere. My department, for example, is trying to put all of our records in digital form. And then, because we believe in the Freedom of Information Act and transparent government, we want to put them all out on the internet. And all of you can sit up at 3 in the morning in your pajamas and look at everything we've ever done if you can't sleep. And then finally, social media. It's out there. It's huge. And if anything makes me feel old, this makes me feel old. Because I do not get Facebook yet, even though my children have tried to get me interested in Facebook. But all of those things all together are changing commercial development and changing how people are going to shop, both now and in the next decade. And if you're a developer trying to make millions of investments with millions of dollars and trying to guess what the market is going to be like in 10 years right now, it's a scary time. It's very difficult for them to, for people to understand that. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you, gentlemen, for an absolutely outstanding presentation. It was just terrific. We'll open it up for questions. Jim Perkins on this side has a microphone, and John McCauley has a microphone, and we'll come to you with a microphone.
One of my soapboxes for development is the lack of pedestrian access. Everything seems to have an automobile to it, so I would be interested in knowing how, if you have crosswalks across 29, because I watch people dodge cars going across 29 without any help.
So. I'll start on that. With the particular developments, no, but with the county's comprehensive plan, yes. And we've talked about a more urban form, and there's actually a master plan called Places 29 that covers this area on 29 from Hydraulic Road on up to through the development area in the county. And there's a lot of interest in trying to create a much more pedestrian-friendly and bike-friendly road system and means of access. 29, you're absolutely right. It's a barrier. It's to people being able to move back, pedestrians trying to move back across it. We're trying to get it addressed. It's a big problem, and it's gonna take money for us to get there.
My name's Alan Williams. I live in Redfields. Two questions. The entrance you showed onto Fifth Street, is that the current light at Willoughby Plaza?
Yeah, it's the one.
Because there's a lot of digging going on, right?
That's further south where you see the dirt down there by the Holiday Inn.
Right.
That's another little development.
Is that a Cracker Barrel? My wife asked me to ask that question.
I appreciate
it. She works for Cracker Barrel, but I'm not telling her anything.
I just have to tell you guys that there's three stores that people or three places that people continually ask us about. Trader Joe's. Cracker Barrel and Olive Garden, and I keep saying if we can ever figure out a way to get those three, I'm putting a big mission accomplished banner over our front door, and we're closing it and we're going home.
The new manager or the zone manager for Red Lobster told me that Olive Garden already has a piece of ground.
That may be.
Do you know where it is?
We don't have a plan. We don't have a plan submitted for an Olive Garden. I can say that in the county there has never been a plan submitted for an Olive Garden. With Cracker Barrel, you're right. There was a plan submitted for a Cracker Barrel there. I don't know why, because I never got to talk to the people at Cracker Barrel, but they decided at some point they weren't going to develop there. The owner of the property has shown an interest in going ahead and trying to create a pad, what they call a pad ready site there, and that's what they're working at right now. They would like to go ahead and have it ready so that it can be Cracker Barrel, whoever comes in there, can potentially develop it faster. We suspect that was one of the things with Cracker Barrel. They found it was going to take them longer to build it than they were ready to spend in the store.
Okay, the excuse about college towns wasn't right, because I know in Binghamton, New York, it's right across the street from a college.
Yeah.
Yes, I had a couple of questions. The first one is, I wonder if you could talk for a minute about this sort of cannibalization. I'm thinking of Albemarle Square, where two big retail one restaurant and one retail, Pier 1 and Outback, are moving out of there to go to Stonefields. It's a good thing that grocery store is coming in, otherwise it would be kind of dead in there. And the second question is, could you describe what the access is into Stonefields? Are we going to, it's horrible driving there now, and nobody's even going in there. I'm wondering what it's going to be like when it's actually open.
Let me try to back up to it, because that may be the best way to try to show the accesses. right now, as you know, there's a signal here, and it's showing the signal. There's one here in front of Sperry and the Seminole Square Shopping Center. And then you've probably seen that in their working on this, there will be another signal up here on 29. And this is to allow the people to come in this way. There'll be a back way in. There's also a say on Hydraulic Road over at Cedar Hill in the city. There's a signal as well, though it's deliberately set up so people coming out of here cannot cut through into the city. They'll have to either turn left or right. This is another. There's two more accesses off of 29. This is what they call a right in, right out here. In other words, people can turn right and go in, and turn right and come out. There's also what they call a slip ramp right here, which will allow people to coming along in that far right lane to slip in into to Stonefield. So that's the big thing. We're trying to make sure we're getting them off the road without too much trouble. Coming out, there will be a ability to get out here at Swanson, and there will be ability to get out here at what we call District Avenue here, or Cedar Hill over in the city. And then up at Englewood as well, there's a way to come out there. Additionally, I'd say one of the things that doesn't show very well, but a provision for a future, this is going over into what people call the Comdial property to the north of there, and going over to Greenbrier. At some point, Comdial property will redevelop, but we're trying to provide an access so that we can bring up this parallel road all the way over to Greenbrier Drive in the future. It's been, the traffic modeling's all been done. It works pretty well from what we can tell. I do think that this is going to have a learning curve to it for new users. It's not going to be one of those things that's intuitively obvious to some people. But getting in, because what you'll have to do, Trader Joe's being there right there, we're thinking that most of the people coming in Trader Joe's are going that way, or coming in off of Swanson and going that way. So there's two big things getting into Trader Joe's. So.
Yeah, I'll address that one. With respect,
let us come to you with the microphone.
With respect to your question about cannibalization, you know, retailers operate on typically, you know, sometimes it's a 5-year lease, sometimes it's a 10-year lease. They rarely own the property, so their time frames are fairly short and defined, and you know, they want to be nimble and be able to move. My belief, and I don't know this for a fact, but is that the Outback is repositioning itself in Seminole Square to be across the street from what will soon become a dining destination in Stonefield. There's a number of restaurants. Mark mentioned the Burton's Grill, and there'll be several others. At the same time they reposition, they also get to upgrade and come in with the latest Outback design, which if you've driven by it, it's significantly different than what you see up at Albemarle Place. So the other factor there is that many of these chain restaurants in particular are agglomerations of several brands. And I don't know it's been announced yet, but I believe they're going to backfill that Outback Place up at Albemarle Square with another one of their brands. And so it won't sit for too long. These things happen in the natural course of the business cycle. I wouldn't suggest it means anything in particular other than they want to reposition and get a new look.
What percentage of the jobs at Stonefield in the restaurants, retail stores, and movie theater will be full-time job with health benefits or part-time jobs without health benefits?
Well, the short answer to that one is I don't know. There are things the government regulates. There are things the government doesn't regulate. I would say that there, you know, that they will. I expect
you would have other malls to compare with what those percentages are, and before you invite that kind of development and growth into the county, I would think you would know that, because otherwise we end up with, you know, more people for the free clinic and the UVA emergency room.
Well, I appreciate where you're coming from on that. The retail is always a challenge. The city and the county both, we've never put our focus for economic development on retail. Retail, as we said, it follows rooftops. It's what are the necessary services to support those people who live there. there are places that make destination retail. Freeport, Maine, for example, that's a great example of destination retail. But that's not really anything anyone's interested in doing here. The retail just follows the rooftops.
My question is, how do you think all of this is going to impact the downtown? For example, the movie theaters down there, and even the restaurants and the stores there?
It's a good question. The short answer is we don't know. If we had a crystal ball to see the future, we probably wouldn't be here, be doing something else. But it's a good question, and it does cause some concern. I believe that the downtown mall itself, the fundamentals, the what it's built on, what it's developed into over 35-plus years, it's going to be fine. The question, your specific question about a theater, I don't know. I think we'll have to see. It's a Regal at Stonefield. It's a Regal downtown. They may decide to run second-run movies or not quite the blockbusters downtown or some different genre. That's a possibility. I believe that the theater, along with the skating rink and some other things, had a significant impact in creating the environment that is the mall today. I'd hate to see the theater close. I don't anticipate that it will, but we'll just have to see.
I just say that we see the same things here. For example, when Whole Foods left the county and went to the city, for Federal Realty owns that property, it was an enormous loss for the county, and it was an enormous loss. I mean, both in terms of tax dollars and for other reasons. But the development adjusts, and other things come along, sometimes better, sometimes not as good. That's just part of the evolution that you see with the development. And it kind of goes back to what I was saying towards the end of my presentation. We're demand limited rather than supply limited. We have the ability for a lot of people to do a lot of things here. So that's just kind of part of the evolution you see.
Here's a non-confrontational question. What other stores are going to be going into the area around Kohl's?
Right now, the only thing we don't know, I don't have specific names. They're all little stores. There's nothing big coming in there. If you're thinking anchor type of stores, large department, there's nothing else planned right there for now. It's going to be the little stores, the cell phone stores, the hairdressers, things of that nature. So the services and smaller retail.
Can you clarify? I'm not that quite familiar with the area, but is Stonefield in the county or in the city line, as well as the Fifth Street station?
Yeah, as far as it's in the county, the city line is right there.
Wow.
So it is literally right on the city county line.
It's a pitching wedge from the city.
Yes, I think even I could throw a baseball that far. And actually, Fifth Street Station, the Wegmans, is kind of a similar. There's, all. Let me see if I can flip forward to that project, and I can show you the line.
It's about a 5-iron.
There we go. The creek here, this is Moore's Creek, is actually the dividing line, and so the city is just right there. And this is actually, it's interesting, this is actually the city along Fifth Street that they come in off of. So until you get down here, you're actually in the city.
Will there be an easier entrance and exit to the post office?
The short answer is the entrance you see is what you get. There was a lot of talk about realigning their entrance, trying to get their entrance realigned so it would match with that signal that's being put on the north end of Stonefield. And it just was having to work with the adjoining property owners. It just wasn't happening. But we really wanted to see that happen if we could.
When you opened the Trader Joe's, or with the prospect of opening the Trader Joe's, the Giant closed. There will be other stores that will be opening and other stores closing. What is the demographic trend in terms of population growth, And also, what is the trend as to what kind of population? You can have a rooftop, but if you have a retired couple there, it's different from having a young family there. So what are the expectations of people coming in to support all this retail that's being created?
So you mentioned the Giant that did close at Seminole. And that, don't know the specifics once again, but that Giant 20 years ago, maybe 25 years ago, was new to the market, and it was the Trader Joe's of the day. It was the shopping experience that people desired from the Washington area that they had seen and heard of, and so it was very cutting edge. About 10 years after that, Giant was doing fairly well. They decided to open a second store up on Pantops. So, in and of themselves, to get back to the notion of cannibalization, they cut their market right there and split it between the two stores. Since then, you've had multiple other grocery stores added to the market, and several of which updated significantly. They, for whatever reason, chose not to in that location. So, and I don't know the calculus that went into their decision, but maybe they were looking at the across the street. I'm not sure. I would suggest that the Trader Joe's and the Giant are not direct competitors. I believe Trader Joe's has a really significant niche market that won't compete with any of the full-line grocery stores, I don't believe. So we'll see. Your other question about, how are these going to be supported? I think it's a legitimate question for the average citizen to want to know. You know, we've heard a lot about grocery stores. And, you know, if there's a Fresh Market coming, and there's a Wegmans coming, and the Whole Foods just upgraded, you know, it seems like a lot of grocery stores. But I can assure you that the folks that make these decisions do so with the latest data and forecasts, and they don't take them lightly before they decide that a market is right for them, because a significant amount of effort goes into that in terms of creating the distribution ability to service a store. Back in 4 or 5 years ago, there was a groundswell within the city to locate a Trader Joe's at the Frank Hicks facility in downtown, and there was a petition. Thousands of people signed a petition, and the response that we heard from the company was, well, we're just not ready to get our distribution out that far. We'd love to have a store in the Charlottesville market, but thanks, but no thanks. And, you know, 4 or 5 years later, it turns out they have that ability, and they do want to do that, but it's not an insignificant thing for them to realign their distribution to accommodate a store within their business model.
Hi. I wanted to thank you all for coming out here, and I think it's great that we have so many questions, but obviously they're not all going to be answered today. I hope we continue to as time permits, but I was curious if there is or will be a website that we can access, or some other form of information that we can access on a regular basis to get the answers to our questions.
I'm not aware of a website. I would suggest, and I don't know this for a fact, but I'm quite sure the Shops at Stonefield has a website. It's probably shopsatstonefield.com, yeah. And I'm sure they're going to announce things right via their website and keep people abreast of those activities.
And that was a good point. I wasn't sure if you were asking about for the particular commercial developments or a broader website that what's going on?
A broader website, actually, because okay. There are areas that you haven't talked about at all that I know there's going to be development in.
Right.
Right, from the county.
Yeah, we've tried to do that, and we actually have something called County View out on the albemarle.org, if you look under the online services. But it's, frankly, I'll be the first to admit, it's a clunky product right now, and it's not very user-friendly. But what we try to encourage people to do is, if you got questions, just call up the community development office, and we're glad to try to tell you what's going on there. But and we provide a number of places on our website for people to, if they've got questions, to be able to bring them to us.
Can you tell me how much studying was done as far as traffic is concerned? I cross a hydraulic on 29, and there about 4 cars are able to get through before the light changes. And particularly on Fridays, that crossroad is absolutely jammed.
Now, have there been any studies done? I know you cannot predict the future like you've been saying before and other things, but how about the past? Right now, that area is absolutely one big jam up all the time. And that goes for that ramp on Best Buy up to the bypass. I mean, that whole thing is a mess. Traffic backs up all the way from the bypass past Hydraulic up 29.
Mm-hmm. I'll just start going backwards from where you left off. With the Best Buy ramp, there is a plan that VDOT's working on right now to improve that intersection, to make it a double lane turn down there at the where 29 hits the 250 bypass, which should alleviate a lot of that traffic. As far as the rest of it, yeah, it's been modeled. However, we actually have always identified that as a need for a grade separated interchange there at Hydraulic and 29. The county's actually got an adopted transportation plan that shows a specific intersection for that. That has always been identified as a need. Rio Road at 29 as well has always been identified as a need for a grade separate interchange.
Rio Road is almost in the suburbs in comparison to Hydraulic Road.
Yeah.
And I want everybody in this room to know that that is going to be an absolute mess right there on that crossroad. And there should be some heavy-duty planning involved. And even an overpass that would cost tons of money. Where is that going to come from?
Right. What we found in looking at what was going on with Stonefield is the traffic difference over what could have happened on that property at any time versus what's being built there was really not very large. In other words, we have a problem regardless of Stonefield. It's an existing problem. And it's a regional problem. It's not what's happening there at Stonefield. It's everybody who's trying to go from one part of this area to another part of this area, and that's a critical link right there.
Well, it starts by building these centers, and then you need to do something. It seems to me you're putting the cart in front of the horse. You, literally speaking, you need to have a solution for that. Again, I get back to that one specific intersection. I don't want to hear about any of these other ones because they are problems, and here's one that is just a fresh additional to the other problems.
Right.
I was going to comment on the interchange also. I've long supported a grade-separated interchange there, and it seems to me that by building the Stonefield, I know that's a done deal, but I don't see how you're going to fit in a grade-separated interchange. That's a comment, not a question. My other comment is that I know that this retail development needs growth. It needs residential growth. It needs rooftops. And I know that the county has a policy to preserve its rural areas. But that residential development that's going to support all of these businesses and retail stores and so forth, some of it will live in the apartments in the Stonefield and North Point and so forth, but there's going to be tremendous new pressure on the rural areas. And I've seen the Measle map that shows all the parts of the county that are already zoned for residential development, and I'm very worried about the future of the county in that respect.
Yeah, do we have a question? No. All right.
Rumor has it that a Costco is coming into the Fifth Street station. Is that just a rumor, or is there any basis to that?
It is a good rumor, but it's just a rumor. We've heard Costco, I've heard Home Depot, I've heard a number of other things. I've asked them if they have any definite tenants. And the answer was no, they have nobody signed at this point in time.
The 29 bypass, how would that affect pro and con, all of this?
Oh, man, you want me to grab that third rail, don't you? Did the television cameras leave? thank God. boy, it will make a difference. Whether it, how big of a difference it's going to make is probably in the eyes of the beholder. You know, if you look at the absolute traffic numbers, it doesn't look huge for the bypass. That said, one of the interesting points I brought up about the bypass that hasn't really been focused on is VDOT, to some degree, can control how many people want to use the bypass versus 29 here. And they can control it by the signals. The longer the reds are on 29, the better it is to use the bypass. And somebody was talking earlier about how difficult it was to cross, go from east to west across 29. That's because right now the signal timings are set to provide most of the green for 29 traffic versus cross traffic. So if you build a bypass and you decide you want to support more cross traffic, now you can do it. And that the more you do that for supporting the cross traffic and reducing the delays for the cross traffic, the more you encourage traffic to use the bypass.
So you talked about how interesting it is, so to speak, as a retailer to try to figure out what your market's going to be with the internet, with web sales, with migration of consumers away from Charlottesville to Short Pump or something. The individual developers make their own analysis. And Wegmans, for example, decides that it can have a profitable business in Charlottesville. But do you guys in the county actually try to make your own assessment of whether, if you look at your projected population growth and you look at, let's pick something simple, grocery stores, where you're not going to go outside market anyway. Do you have a sense that the overall development here is reasonable, considering the expected population growth or not? Do you make that assessment?
We do look at terms of what we think will be the demand based on our projected residential growth. But let me just say it is very hard. A great example, you mentioned grocery stores. There's a lot of things happening there. How many of you use Relay Foods? Nobody. Okay. There's a lot of people. Relay Foods, which now instead of going to a grocery store, you look up on the internet, you order your food, they deliver it to your door. That's a service that's out there. The homegrown thing, locally grown foods, the CSAs, the other things, there's a lot of things changing there as far as what food is and how food is brought to people. So that's a great example of how things are changing. And trying to predict what that's going to look like in 10 years, it's kind of hard.
There's been a whole lot of really lofty issues raised, all of which are so difficult to solve. But then you look at the other one issue where you have the worst congestion on 29, I think, anywhere in the states, is right there at Best Buy. And what do you have right there at Best Buy? You have a city bus stop. So if you're really smart, what you do going south on 29 is you get in the middle lane, and 9 times out of 10, you'll whiz by everybody who's backed up there for 5 or 6 blocks. You'll cut right in front of that bus and go up the ramp. I hope not too many people do that, because that'll ruin my special route. But I cannot believe that there is a bus stop in that lane.
I'm really disappointed you're letting everybody else know our secret.
Cat's out of the bag.
Time for one more question.
I hate to be the last question, but going back to the third rail and the Western Bypass, if it is built, one of the ideas is to make Route 29 sort of a boulevard concept, bring it back into a city street, make it a commercial center. Does this play into the developments as you see them? Is this something that would be a wave of the future of interest or not?
Right now, what you're talking about has been discussed. It's even been discussed in public meetings. It is not on any adopted plans yet, but it is something that's out there. It's something that a lot of people are thinking about. I think, John, once again, you're on the leading curve on a lot of things here, and I think that's one of them. Is this could be something we see with 29 North in the future, but it's nothing definite yet.
Well, gentlemen, thank you for an excellent presentation, a very lively discussion.